So I got a question for you. Have you ever been robbed? Like, I'm not saying like you lost something or somebody broke into your car at night or at work or when you were in a store, like robbed face to face. If you have been robbed or if you know someone who's been robbed, it's a weird experience. A couple years ago, November 2018, I frequently, you know, would sell things on Facebook Marketplace. Some of you have heard this story before, and I was selling one of my previously used phones, and I was robbed. In fact, in that moment, I actually had the thought, I should record my experience. So if you haven't seen it, even if you have, here's what happened over 2 years ago.
What's up, friends? Facebook, family. I'm here at one of my favorite places, Starbucks, here in Levis Common. See, right here in Perrysburg. I posted that we had a cell phone for sale, and I've done this for like 5 or 6 years, and so set up arrangements to meet at the Starbucks here after service. Sat down, shook hands, put the cell phone right here on this table. He looked at it, and then he handed me the money, and he walked quickly, like ran out the door. And so I started looking at these $100 bills. I'm like, that feels like paper, not like $100 bills. And sure enough, he printed off 4-color $100 bills and then ran off with my phone. So if you're selling your stuff out there on Facebook Marketplace, even meeting in a public place like Starbucks isn't always safe. So there you go. There's my story tonight. Yeah, and Notre Dame's playing right now. I'm missing my game because I gotta fill out a police report so this doesn't happen to somebody else or whatever. So anyway, heads up, beware.
Yeah, it was a weird experience. I mean, okay, yes, you have a couple questions. First thing, I'll point out the obvious. It's pre-COVID, okay? I looked at it, and I'm like, you're shaking hands. You're not wearing a mask. There's actually people sitting down at the restaurant or at Starbucks. Right now, it's not acceptable at Starbucks. Other places, it is. Like, it's okay. It's amazing how much can change in 2 years. Now, if we set that aside, you're probably wondering, did we ever catch the guy? The answer is no. So $700, just gone, okay? Just like, okay, I have the printed fake dollar bills. So that does me a lot of good. You know, it's like, my first thought was, I'm really angry. In fact, as he ran out, I'm trying to do the math and figure it out. Like, why did he run away? And I feel it took 30 seconds to a minute, and I go busting out the door, and I look around because I'm thinking to myself, I can outrun almost anybody. If he tries to run to Bowling Green, I'll catch him, okay? And then he'll see. But I couldn't see anybody running. I didn't recognize it. It's like he was gone. So then I'm angry about it. It's like, I can't believe this happened to me. And then you just can't help but start laughing. Like, you can't make this stuff up. Like, at Starbucks, this happened to me. And then it started to feel personal. It's like, he looked me in the eye. Like, he sat down at the table knowing full well what he was about to do to me. Like, I was polite to him, and he's like, I'm totally going to rip you off. And then I felt sad. Like, he needed it that bad? Man, I wonder what's going on in his life. Like, he didn't know who he was dealing with. He didn't know who I was. I'm kind of a big deal. Why are you laughing? You know, what's interesting is, if he really needed it that bad, if he would have told me, if he would have told me about the state of his world or how he needed help, I wonder if we could have helped him so much more. Did you know that you can rob God? Maybe you've never thought of that before, but you can rob God. And what's interesting is, in that moment when you take it, like when you keep or hold, you think you're getting something, but what it really does is it costs you way more than you realize. I want to talk about that today, because I think this plays an important role in the way that we experience the uncommon path to the blessed life. So whatever campus you're at, I am really glad that you are here. And we have special guests who join online all around the world, on TV, NBC 24, and the CW. And we have men who tune in at Toledo Correction. Will you put your hands together to just say hello to those who are watching that we love you, we see you, so thankful to spend time with you. If we've never met, my name's Ben, I'm the lead pastor, and if you're watching online, I would actually encourage you, if you have the time, to stop, go back, binge watch the first two episodes, because they really set a foundation for what we're going to cover today. Without that, I'll review a little bit to get us caught up to speed, but I think those foundational principles are really important. For those of you that are here, here's where we started the Blessed Life 2 weeks ago. Episode one, we talked about how God wants to bless your life, okay? You may not feel that, you may not think that, you may not believe that. If you're exploring Christianity, you may be like, okay, I've heard this before and I'm not sure I like where it's going. Stay with me. The reality is a blessed life starts in the heart. This is what is taught throughout the Bible, that it's not the stuff out there coming into my life that blesses my life. It's about something that happens in here that changes the way I experience the world out there. So don't limit blessing to a nicer, newer car, body, job, income, or whatever. It can be included. Those things can be a part of it, but that's not what it means to live a blessed life. Jesus taught about this in a passage many of you have heard me say before, and I just want to look at it again, especially in light of the opening story. It says that there's a thief, and the thief's purpose is to steal, kill, and destroy, but my purpose is to give you, to give us a rich and satisfying life. In the original language, when he talks about a rich and satisfying life, he's not talking about, you know, Forbes top 100. He's talking about an experience in your heart that nothing here on earth can take away. But he warns that there is a thief. And you know what's interesting about a thief? A thief wants to take that which is meant for you and take it for themselves quietly when you're not looking, when you're not around. And so there's a thief that wants to steal your blessing. He wants to kill what God wants to do in your heart. He wants to destroy the purpose that God has for you. And when I look around, especially in this last year, I think he's been doing an incredible job. We've been letting him, right under our nose, take away some of the things that I think God is trying to produce in us, that he wants us to receive. And so a blessed life starts in the heart. As you begin to understand that, you see that you experience God's best when you give him your first. You experience the blessed life that God has for you when you put him first. You see, we give our first to whatever we think will bless us the most. Our first response, the first part of our day, the first of whatever area of our life, of our relationship, our family, any area, we give it to whatever we think is going to bless us in the moment, keep us in control. And so this is why God asks us to give him the first part of the day, because we realize he can bless us more than Facebook or Instagram or TikTok can, or whatever news program you watch. He can bless us the first part of the year more than anything else that we put our hands to in January. So we do 21 days of prayer and fasting. This is why we put God first in our marriage, in our family, in our finances, because we believe that he is the source of blessing. And what's interesting is when you see this played out, I don't know how many of you are fans of Chick-fil-A, any Chick-fil-A fans? Yeah, okay, yeah. Just in case you didn't know, they're closed today, which really doesn't always make me happy. But their story behind that, if you don't know the story behind that, why are they closed on Sunday? Arguably one of the most popular days for people and families to eat out. It's because they want to put God first. They are a Jesus-following family that started this, that wanted to give their employees and themselves a day off. They wanted to give God the first part of their week. And you know what's interesting? They do not have the most number of stores, but their per store, their individual store sales are number one in the fast food industry, nearly doubling any other fast food company. And they're closed on Sunday. That's incredible. This is what happens when we put God first. Here's why. Here's why this is important. God does not want to lead you places that are going to destroy your heart. Blessed life starts in the heart. God doesn't want to give you things. He can't pour out his blessing if you're going to, in turn, put him second place. If you, in turn, that blessing is going to destroy you, your life, your relationship with God, and the purpose that he has for you. And so this is why blessed life starts in the heart. This is why we experience it when we give him our first. And what I'm going to cover today, I'm going to warn you, okay, is going to be challenging. It is the uncommon path to the blessed life. But if you give me a few minutes, I think it is one of the most encouraging messages of any of this series. And so the bottom line for our time together is this. The tithe is God's test for the blessed life. Now, I know. I see some of you, okay? You're doing it. You're like, oh, gosh, the T word this weekend. I didn't need that. You know, don't give me that right now. Just, I told you. I warned you. I said it was going to be challenging. And here's the deal. Some of you have heard messages like this before. In my 5 years as lead pastor at this church, this is the first time I've addressed this subject. And some of you, you've heard this before, but I'm guessing you will have never heard it like you are going to hear it today. And for those of you that are exploring Christianity, the faith, you're kind of new, and you're sitting here going, this is what makes me leery of churches, church and money talk, all of that stuff. I want you to just be an observer. This is a powerful weekend for you to clear up some of the misinformation and misconceptions people have around that one word. And so let's just take a few minutes. There will be moments where it feels a little challenging. I'm not trying to guilt trip anybody, but I do think this is an insightful perspective on why this is the test to the blessed life. So let's start with terms. Tithe, what does it mean? It means tenth. That's the literal definition of the word. It literally means 10% or giving back, not even giving. You're returning to God a tenth of what he has provided you. For example, when I get paid, the day that I get paid, I set it up to auto-withdraw from my bank account 10% directly to God's house, the church. That's the way that the principle has been lived out. Why? Because I want him first in my life, and what he asks to return back is a tenth or a tithe because it's a test for the blessed life. And the reason that this is important comes back to the quote that I brought up last week from Robert Morris. When God is first, then everything in your life comes into order. I believe that that's true. Robert Morris is the one who's kind of the inspiration behind this series. He wrote a book called The Blessed Life. I recommended it last week. I know a few of you picked it up. But when God is first, he puts everything into order. He can't be second. You may think he's second, but what you've done when God is not first is you've separated yourself from the blessed life that God wants to pour out in you. In other words, when you don't tithe, you rob God. We're supposed to return it to him. And when we keep that for ourselves, we're robbing him. Now, those are not my words. This is not me here trying to put a guilt trip on you. I want to look at a passage where this very principle is talked about. And the context for this is Malachi. It's a book in the Old Testament. Malachi it's a prophetic book. That basically means this is a message or a series of messages that Malachi was sent to preach or deliver to the Israelite people. This is about 500 years before Christ arrives on earth. And the message is to a group of people who are in exile. They're under the Persian reign, okay? So they're no longer in their promised land. They don't have their own king. They are far away from the blessed life. Far, far away. And so God sent Malachi as a messenger to deliver a message to the people of Israel that I think has some relevance for us today. And here's what he says. He says, I, the Lord, do not change. Quick question. Can God change? I mean, I know you read that here, but have you ever thought about this? God cannot change. If he can change, that means he can get better. Or if he changes, that means he needs to get better, which means he's not already perfect. So he can't change because he's already perfect. This means the personhood of God cannot change. The character of God cannot change. This is important because it helps us trust him. We know he's not going to kind of like turn into a bad guy. His character, who he is not going to change. That's what makes him trustworthy. And the reason that God starts with this is because the second part of the verse is kind of funny, although it doesn't sound funny when you read it. I, the Lord, do not change, so you, the descendants of Jacob, are not destroyed. It's meant to be a little funny in the sense that he's basically saying, it sounds harsh, but essentially he's saying, hey, I'm the God that doesn't change. And even though you look at your circumstances today, I'm the same God who brought you out of slavery in Egypt. I'm the same God who brought you into the promised land. I'm the same God who has a purpose for your life. I do not change. Otherwise, you would probably be wiped out right now. So the fact that you're still alive means my work or involvement in your life, I don't want to be done with you. The challenge for Israel, he goes on to say, is ever since the time of your ancestors, though, you have turned away from my decrees. You have not kept them. Return to me, and I will return to you, says the Lord Almighty. I'll be involved in your life when you bring your life under the created order of putting me first. You are where you are, God says, because not because of him, but because you have chosen a different path. You won't return to me. You won't bring your life into his order. And so what happens next is he starts to relay how this conversation would go if he were there in person. It's like he knew what the Israelites, he knew what we might be thinking. He goes on, he says, but you all ask, well, how are we to return as if we've never left? You know, like, well, what do you mean, God, return? What do you mean we've left you? What do you mean, all of this stuff? And so God says, will a mere mortal rob from God? I mean, isn't it common sense that humans don't steal from the divine, but yet you, go back aside, rob me? It's like God's like, hey, most people know, but you're robbing me. And they go on, but you ask, how are we robbing you? Like, what do you mean? How could we possibly rob you, God? I mean, look at where we're at. Look at it. We're in exile. And he says, in tithes and offerings. Essentially, God sends a messenger to say, you are where you are because you've stepped out of the created order. You are robbing me. You are not giving your first to me. Quick aside here. Sometimes when we hear the word tithes and offerings, we assume they're the same thing. That it's just basically giving. Like God is saying, hey, you're robbing me and you're giving and in your giving. The truth is they are two separate things. A tithe is the first 10% that you bring back or you return to God. An offering is anything over and above that. When God pours out his blessing in your life and you want to pass that blessing on, you're giving an offering at that point after you've been faithful with the first 10%. That's the principle of the first. And so if you're sitting here at this point going, well, Ben, this is Old Testament stuff. I don't know what this really has to do with me and our life today, and it's kind of archaic. Stay with me. I want you to see the principle, not just the passage. Malachi is essentially delivering a message from God to the nation of Israel. You want what God offers, but you don't trust him enough to put him first. You want God to bless you, to add to your life, but you really don't see him as the blessing. You just want the stuff that he can give. And so the result, God says, is that you're under a curse. You're stuck. Your whole nation, you are under a curse. Kind of like the Browns in the NFL playoffs. Until last weekend, you know this is coming, didn't you? I mean, I know we got a lot of Steeler fans, but man, last week felt so good. It may be coming to me today, but let me think of it differently. You know, it's like, I'll think of another example of a curse. It's like playing Alabama in the college playoffs. Now, I think we can all relate to that one, right? You know, Ohio State fans, Notre Dame fan. I mean, it's like Notre Dame, every time they're in a big game, they're cursed. I mean, that's the cursed life is the opposite of a blessed life. We feel stuck. We feel in exile. We feel fought with. It's like nothing seems to be working right. I'm constantly restless. God says, you are the ones putting yourselves under this curse. How? Because you are robbing me. There, four times God uses that word. Theft is different from robbery. A thief wants to show up and take from you when you're not around, when you don't notice, when you can't see. A robbery happens when you are taking from the person face to face. Essentially, what God is saying is, you have come into my house. You've taken from my pockets, from me. It's personal. It's intentional. It's defrauding. So this is the message that God is giving as to why they're experiencing life the way that they're experiencing life. So what are they to do? Well, he says, bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, to the house of God, that there may be food in my house. Now, there's some multiple meanings here. Does he mean literal food? In part, yes. If you understand the sacrificial system, that's part of it, but it goes way deeper than that. He says, bring the whole tithe, not the leftovers, not when you feel like it, not when you paid off everything else. No, you bring the whole tithe to where? To the house of God, not to anywhere you want, not to the organization that's your favorite. No, you're returning it to God. When you start to look at this principle throughout the Bible, the tithe, the principle of the tithe essentially teaches that you have one of two choices. You can return it to God, or you steal it. You make it yours, and you do with it what you want. Now, This is where we start to feel the tension, right? It starts to feel a little personal, like, wait a second. Some of you are sitting there going, well, I mean, that may be a lot of money. Maybe you're thinking, I don't know that I can afford that. I understand. So just let's focus on the principle and talk about how to afford it in a minute, right? Others of you are like, that's a lot of money. I don't know that I want to give that to the church. Do they even need it? That's not the question that God asks you to ask. That's not the point of your giving, is whether they need it or not, or whether they're worthy. Sure, make sure that they're being good fiscal stewards of what they are given. I think that's a wise thing to do. But ultimately, as individuals, we are accountable before God how we return to him a portion of what he's given us if we think he is the one who gives us our life. We're accountable for returning a portion of that. And then for me as a church leader, I have a double accountability. I'm accountable for what I do with my income or what I return back to God. But as a church leader, I am also accountable before God on how I steward how he invests through you in the life of this church, in the house of God. And the reason that this is important is because he wants food in his house. What does that mean? He wants people to be fed spiritually. He wants people to be introduced to Jesus in the life-changing adventure with him. He wants people taking their next steps in knowing him more, finding freedom, discovering their purpose, and using their life to make a difference. That's what he means when he says, so that there's food in my house. And so when you give, you're returning to God, and then God uses that to feed people spiritual food that they desperately need. And what's so powerful about this is he goes on. He says, test me in this. Bring the whole tithe and test me in this. This is the encouraging part of the passage. He's like, let me prove it to you. Prove what? He says, test me in this and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that there will not be enough room to store it. I mean, like, are you ready to experience God's blessing in your life? Are you ready for him to open the floodgates of heaven? I mean, if this is a little bit of what your heart craves, well, then the tithe is God's test for the blessed life. What's a test? A test is essentially a measure of the reliability, the quality, or the condition of something. You get a test at school, and what is it testing? It's testing the reliability, the quality, or the condition of what you've learned, right? If you go to the doctor's office and they run you through a test, it's a measurement of the quality, reliability, or the condition of your physical body. God tests us. And sometimes it feels like tension, I get that. But throughout the Bible, there are all sorts of tests. In fact, the reason that 10th is a number used, the tithe is the number used, is because 10 is a common number used throughout the Bible in referring to testing. I'm going to ask you a few questions. We don't normally do this. I want you to answer out loud, loudly, wherever you're at. Just give an answer. Even if you're not that experienced with the Bible, I think you're going to get the hang of it. So let's start with the first question. Let's see how you do. How many plagues did God send to Egypt? 10. Pretty good. Best service so far. A little quiet. You don't want to fail the test, but you did great. So, you know, another way that I could have worded this is, you know, like, what did God do to test Pharaoh's heart? He sent 10 plagues. I mean, that's what it says in the Bible. He was testing Pharaoh's heart. Let me give you another one. You guys are doing great. How many commandments did God give Israel? Oh, man, now you get the hang of it. You know, it's like 10 commandments. Yeah, you know that one. Now, you may not be familiar with the next one. Well, first, let me say this. What are the 10 commandments? They're a test of our heart to God and towards others. Here's the next one. You may not actually remember the stories, but I think by now you're going to get it. How many times did God test Israel in the wilderness? 10, that's right. See, you're getting the hang of it. Numbers 14, you can look it up for yourself. You might not know this one, but how many times was Jacob's wages changed when he worked for his uncle Laban? 10. Okay, yeah, see, I know. You're like, I haven't read that one. It's 10. You got it. How many times was Daniel tested? 10. You're doing great. Matthew 25, when Jesus is talking about the end times and the testing that we will face, he refers to how many virgins? 10, that's right. In Revelation 2, how many days of testing will we endure? 10, you guys got it. How many disciples did Jesus recruit? 12, okay, I was testing you, okay? Some of you got it. Yeah, you got it. 12 disciples, that's great. Now, the question is, when God tests, what is he testing? It's not about how good you are. It's not about you being perfect. It's not about even your performance. He's testing your heart's trust in him. He's testing the condition, the reliability, the quality of your heart, of your faith. Is your heart ready for blessing? If God isn't first, you're not ready. Some of you, you're like, well, if it's really about God being first, then why do people, you know, at work or my neighbor, I mean, they seem to have a lot of stuff and they're not godly, okay? So why is God, then your heart is full of envy and jealousy. Your heart's not ready. See, this isn't about comparing what we have versus what they have. It's really about what is God pouring out in your life. God does not want to lead you to a place that's going to destroy your heart or put him in second place. And so God tests our heart to see if we're ready. He invites us to tithe as a test to see if we trust him first. But what's amazing about this is it's a double test. It's also our opportunity to test his reliability, to test his credibility, for us to see, is he who he says he is? And that double test leads to a deeper blessing. The Bible talks about these tests all over the place. One popular passage that some of you are familiar with is James 1:2. It says, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Some of you have heard this. This is why this topic feels like pressure, because there is a little bit of pressure here. There is a challenge. A trial is a test of our faith. Tithing is a test of our trust. And these trials grow our endurance. And if you know how this passage goes, when your endurance is fully developed, when your faith is fully developed, you will be perfect. You will be complete. You will need nothing. Another word that you could use there is you will be blessed. You'll experience the life that God has for you. So yes, tithing is a test. And tithing is also biblical. Now, for those of you that are observing or you're exploring, some of what I'm going to talk about next goes a little bit deeper into some Bible context that you might not be able to connect all the dots on. I'll do my best. But for those of you that are believers, you know, sometimes Christians will say to me, well, tithing is the Old Testament. It's under the law. And we now live under the grace of Christ. And so we don't really have to follow the law. And here's what's interesting. The word tithe is used 41 times throughout the Bible. Less than half of that are the mentions of the tithe in the Old Testament law. The rest of the time, over half of it, the word tithe is mentioned outside of the law. This is a principle that existed before the law and was validated by Jesus. For example, Abram, who became Abraham, the legendary patriarch of the Jewish faith, right? He was visited by a priest. The priest's name was Melchizedek, and most Christian scholars believe that that's a Christophany, which is an appearance of Christ in the Old Testament. I told you I'm getting a little Bible nerd here, but I know a few of you find this interesting. So Christ appears in the Old Testament through Melchizedek, and he blesses Abram with a priestly blessing, and here's Abram's response. Then Abram gave Melchizedek a tenth, a tithe, of all of the goods that he had recovered. Of his increase or his income. This is a principle that existed before the law. It exists outside of the law. So when we use that as the reason why we don't have to follow it, I think it's potentially a little short-sighted. I'll give you another example. Let's say, Dr. Bob down here, if you were to give me your wallet, I would ask for your wallet and I were to take it. You don't have to bring it to me, but because I might keep it, right? I mean, I could say, hey, I'm a believer. I don't live under the law. Even though it says thou shalt not steal, I'm going to keep it for myself. You guys would be like, well, no, that's foolish, Ben. That's wrong. Well, it's outside of the law. Well, yeah, there's some principles here that apply. What it means when we say you're no longer under the law, it means your eternal destiny is no longer determined by whether you tithe or not. Not under the law means it's not about your performance that earns God's forgiveness in your life. Jesus accomplished that for us. And because we follow Jesus, we should follow in the principles that he's laid out. And Jesus affirmed the tithe. He was having a coaching conversation with the Pharisees about issues in the heart. And he says, hey, you know what? You tithe, but you miss the heart issues. And he goes on to clarify, you should tithe. He affirmed the tithe. He says, this should be a practice in our life. But do not neglect the more important things in your heart. Jesus affirmed it, which I think is important, and he takes it a step deeper. But don't just give and then be a greedy, angry, selfish, self-consumed, a negative, bitter person on the other side. He cares about our heart, And the tithe is a test for that. Let me give you a story that I think helps illustrate this. I want you to imagine that I'm going to go away for many months. I don't even know when I'm going to return. And I'm a wealthy individual. And I care about my wife. And so I'm going to hire three individuals to help take care of her while I'm away. And I'm going to give them each $10,000. Each of them, $10,000. And here are my instructions. Once a month, I want you to show up and give my wife $1,000 and then just see if there's anything that you can do to serve her. But give her $1,000 of the $10,000 that I'm giving. You can spend the other $9,000 on whatever you want. I care about my wife. I want her taken care of, which means some of you are basically doing the math and going, well, then why not just give the $30,000 to your wife? Fair question, but stick with me in this example, okay? A few months go by, and I decide to call my wife to see how things are going. Hey, Lauren, are you getting the support that I've set up for you while I'm away? And Lauren says, well, you know what? The first guy, he comes every month, first of the month, and he gives me $1,000 every month. And he asks, is there anything that I can do to help? And it's great. The second guy, he shows up the second week of the month, and he gives me $2,000. I'm not sure why. He asks, hey, is there anything that I can do to help? And when I need something, they're able to help, and that's great. The third guy, he started with $800, then he went to $300, and last month he gave nothing. Now, how would you reply? Well, imagine if she said, you know what? He offers to serve, but he doesn't really give anything. How would you reply? I mean, I think you would be frustrated because serving is one thing and that's valuable, but it's not the same instruction. The instructions I gave to the three that I hired is I want you to bring 10% to my wife so that there's food in our house, so that she has her needs, whatever they are, taken care of. And serve, yes, but I'm the one who gave it all to you. I'm asking for you to give 10%. So the first guy, I'm going to keep sending $10,000 to. He's been faithful with what I've given. The second guy, I'm really excited about because he's being extra generous and he didn't even have to be necessarily. The third guy, I'm going to stop sending money because he wasn't satisfied with the $9,000 and decided to keep the extra $1,000 for himself, even though he was willing to kind of serve. I'm going to stop sending him the money and give it to the second guy who's being extremely generous. So let me bring this illustration home. Jesus, our Savior, has gone away. And he's looked at his followers and he says, I want you to take care of my bride. That's a term that he uses for the church. He says, hey, you know what? Here's what I want you to do. Of what I provide you, I want you to give 10% so that there can be food in my house. And those of you that obey, those of you that follow that, you'll be blessed. Those of you that are generous and you give over and above that, you'll be even more blessed. But if not, you're choosing to live under a curse that will cause you to lose probably what you crave the most. You see, the tithe is a test. The tithe is biblical, but the tithe is personal for God. Why? Because the church is his bride. He cares about the local church is what he started to be the hope of the world. And so we're robbing God when we keep it for ourselves. It's also personal and probably more personal because we are robbing God of an opportunity for him to pour out his blessing in our life. He's like, stop robbing me. Stop robbing me. Test me in this, he says, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that there will not be enough room to store it. Like, he wants to open the windows of heaven. Like, he wants your life to be blessed. And he wants to push back the thief that wants to devour your life. The next verse, it says, I will prevent pests from devouring your crops, and the vines in your fields will not drop their fruit before it's ripe, says the Lord Almighty. He wants to increase your productivity, not decrease it. He wants you to experience the fullness of life, a rich and satisfying life. And then when you do that, all of the nations will call you blessed, for yours will be a delightful land. So some of you, man, you came in today feeling like you're living under a curse. Maybe you feel like you're far away from the life that God intended for you. Well, tithing, it's not the amount. It's not even the gift. It is the tenth is a test about where is your heart really. And when we tithe, it removes the curse. It helps us step away from the curse. It rebukes the devourer. And God is able to restore the blessing. It's all right there in Malachi 3. It's God's invitation. And he's saying, let me prove it to you. Let's stop robbing God of the opportunity to pour out his blessing in your life and through the local church. Because, I mean, this is what it means to be a part of God's family. I want you to be blessed. I want you to experience the blessed life. And so I'm not sure what God's Spirit is communicating to you, but I'd love for you to just take a minute right now, wherever you're watching, and just ask, God, what's your Spirit saying to me? What would it look like to live that blessed life? In a moment, our band is going to sing, and I want you to allow the words of this song to just begin to move inside of you, connect your heart to that. God wants to bless your life. He wants to move in ways that will cause your heart to sing. Our God is a God of wonders. Mountains are still being moved. But you're not going to experience it if you choose to go your own way. And so maybe you've never taken your first step. If you've never surrendered your life to Him and taken that first step of faith, or you're not even sure where it begins, would you ask us? We get asked almost every weekend, online, either in person or online. You can ask our staff, our prayer team, our online moderators. You could fill out a Connect card and go, man, I need a little clarity. I'm hearing Jesus talked about in ways that maybe I've never really understood. And so if you need help taking your first step, we would love to do that. But for those of you who already have, I believe that God's Spirit is here inviting you to trust Him in some way. I don't even know what those specific steps are. Maybe it's just taking a step towards this principle of tithe in your life. Whatever it is, let's connect our hearts with God during this next song. Thanks.